Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast, sponsored by cradiodifferently.com. I'm Robin Hicks.
And I'm Alice Tilakowski.
This week,
pro-carbon campaign takes to Parliament Hill.
What if we say yes to making big companies pay when they pollute our skies?
GQ puts a stereo in its spine.
NAB pranksters at it again.
Where are you from? What do? Do you have family? Do you have kids? Do you have a dog? You got mates? Play sport? You go.
Charlie's Angels are go-go and Big Bang Theory hits big.
And marketers shun social media know-how.
So with us today in the studios of CBS Interactive is Launch PR Group's account manager, Camille Alacon.
Hi, guys.
And podcast producer, Colin Delaney.
Hello.
So welcome back, Camille, to the podcast. I'm not sure how many times you've been on it now. Many, many, many times, I'm sure.
Probably too many.
Yes, indeed. So what's been happening in the world of Launch?
We've recently started working with Ted Noff's foundation. A lot of people will probably be quite familiar with the work they do. It was founded by Ted Noffs back in the 1970s, actually 1970. And basically what they do is they provide support and services for at-risk youth, so young people with issues of mental illness, homelessness, and drug and alcohol issues. So it's just been early days yet, but we were involved in a fundraising campaign for one of their programs, the Street University. So a few guys, actually they were on the Mumbo Report recently, a few guys approached Ted Noffs to raise some funds for Street Uni called the 30 Days Has September campaign. Simple idea, do something new during September, go commando for a day, wear an eye patch, write a song, or all of the above on the same day. And I suppose the idea was to basically do something fun and make life more enjoyable and show young people that, you know, they have the power to do anything in their own lives as well.
Mm. So what sort of media coverage do you get for this?
We got some good media coverage, actually, in terms of the Sunday Telegraph, which is obviously is the highest circulating newspaper at the moment, MX newspaper, and Life Matters and Radio National, ABC Talk, Canberra Times, Today FM. So some good initial results, which we're quite happy with.
Yeah.
And we've also done a bit of work. I don't know if you guys recall, but we handled the comms for TEDx Sydney earlier
yes,
on this year.
I remember that, yeah.
And kind of removed from that, but I just mentioned it because we managed to get Matt Noffs on TEDx Canberra. So they all are organised by separate people, but he was the closing speaker, actually, and Matt Noff spoke about the topic of social enterprise.
Yeah.
So the idea is, Matt, you know, Ted Noffs is a not-for-profit, but look, community organizations need to stop relying on government handouts and not just models that are sustainable but also generative.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose that was the crux of what he was saying to the audience, so had a good reception.
Yeah. You mentioned Sunday Telegraph.
Mm.
Is there a PR bullseye for boxes to tick in terms of getting PR coverage? What would rank up there with the best?
Yeah, absolutely. I think every client has a target, you know, top 20 targets for media, and some of those media outlets that I just listed, you know, are amongst them. Every client has a different media target, so it's case by case. It's certainly not one size fits all, and obviously I'm not going to go through every client and every single media target because that would be giving away too much.
Okay.
Camille, just back to what you were saying about social enterprise and not relying on government handouts, do you think more not-for-profits are engaging PR companies to help them out because they don't have, you know, they don't have as much support around them from a government perspective?
I think it's the same idea, isn't it? Having a PR agency or any kind of promotional agency is to make sure that you're communicating with a wider public and, you know, policymakers that you are making a difference in some way. So it's all well and good to actually have these amazing programs and services in place. But, you know, you want people to know about it, not just so that you can use the services yourself if it needs be, but also to let everyone from the grassroots to, you know, policymakers know what you're doing. And hopefully, you know, maybe they'll take notice and want to be involved in some way.
Sure.
Next, victory for the pro-carbon tax campaign.
Earlier this week, carbon tax supporters descended on Parliament Hill to spell out Say Yes to Clean Energy with placards that voiced individual sentiments about basically why they said yes to clean energy. The Say Yes campaign was devised by the Republic of Everyone, and it kicked off with TV ads featuring Kate Blanchett and Michael Caton, which most of us would be pretty familiar with.
What if we say yes to making big companies pay when they pollute our skies?
We'd be saying yes to less carbon pollution.
Yes to new money for clean energy that never runs out.
Yes to help for people struggling with bills.
Yes to jobs.
Yes to better health for our kids.
And finally, doing something about climate change.
So let's say yes, Australia, because yes is what makes this country great.
Authorised by M. Wooden Hamilton.
Robin, you're a tree-hugging hippie. Give us your unbiased opinion on the Republic of Everyone's campaign.
Yeah, I can't really be unbiased in this case. But yeah, I mean, so the campaign started off with a TV ad that you just described, featuring Cate Blanchett, which I think you remember, mate, was absolutely slaughtered by the mainstream press. I suspect that the budget may have dried up and they could no longer afford TV ads. They switched to a grassroots initiative via a website. So they asked all the supporters of the carbon tax campaign to give their reasons why they backed the campaign. And they took all these reasons and they published a book. This book was sent to MPs ahead of the vote on the carbon tax. Plus, the reasons for supporting it were made into placards. And these placards were distributed outside Parliament House this week. There's an aerial, a really nice aerial shot that's on Umbrella at the moment that spells out "Say Yes to Clean Energy" that you can see from a helicopter above. Ultimately the campaign was successful, I think, with fairly minimal spend.
And the book and placards were made from recycled paper?
I did put that question to Republic of Everyone. Yeah, they offset the emissions.
Sure.
and that were used to create the book, and also it's printed on recycled paper.
Yeah, I was about to say that's a lot of paper.
Camille, obviously you're in the PR world, but do you think something with such a large kind of that's such a large talking point really needs a TV campaign behind it to support it all the way through?
Look, I thought it was actually a well thought through and thought out campaign, and now you've just said, Robin, that they, perhaps the budget had dried up. Look, for me, the approach was great in that starting with the mass media, a big TVC, controversial ad with Cate Blanchett. If anything, I think that was the point for it to be controversial. It gained a lot of media coverage, attention, so it drove a lot of talkability around the issue. It's always going to be divisive anyway. Mm. And then the approach to the grassroots, you know, galvanising everyday Australians to write their messages, put them on in booklets, you know, send them around to MPs, and then the placards, which was a nice touch in the end. And it did also receive good media coverage. I noticed this week there was just a couple of articles, or there was one in the Herald, and it was mentioned in ABC as well. So I thought it was quite successful.
Mm, yeah, and I think this campaign, where it did suffer,
yeah,
was confusion with a government campaign. The Say Yes Australia campaign wasn't backed by the government at all. It's backed by 9 NGOs.
Yeah.
Don't have an awful lot of money to spend on a marketing campaign. They blew a lot of it on the TV campaign to begin with, which I understand was about $1 million. And then the rest they used to go grassroots, which ultimately was effective.
Do you think the government now has a responsibility to front up the money to do their own advertising campaign about pure education, about what it's actually going to mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And that's handled by another advertising agency called Smart, which is now McCann. Where the campaign was flawed was the background noise. While the Say Yes Australia campaign was going on, there was a separate campaign, as I mentioned, by the government. So that confused the consumer, but ultimately, yeah, it worked.
Yeah.
Despite the placards and the books being printed on recycled paper and them offsetting their carbon emissions and everything like that, that could easily be pushed to the side for someone who's anti-carbon tax. You know, the Alan Jones and, you know, these kind of guys can leave out the fact, obviously, that everything's been offset and everything's been... Does that play into...
Yeah, I mean, definitely. That's it. For the naysayers, it's an excuse to jump on the campaign and say, well, hang on, you've just published a book and you've sent it out, you've distributed it to lots of people. You know, there's an element of hypocrisy here, but, you know, it's advertising. Advertising consumes energy, and that's just the nature of the business.
Well, next, Usher and Belvedere Vodka go red.
There's more to radio than music through your headphones. Radio can connect your brand with consumers in more ways than just over the airwaves. Check out the case study for Nissan Microcitizen, where listeners were sent to LA, Barcelona and New York to get in sync with the city. Or the interview on how the Lady Gaga deal for Vodafone All-Time Prepaid was done. See that and more at seeradiodifferently.com.
On the October-November issue of GQ, in Australian media first, the spine contains headphones and an MP3 player with a message from R&B singer Usher promoting Belvedere Vodka Going Red. Let's have a listen.
Belvedere Red is the same naturally smooth vodka that you know and love in a product red special edition bottle. I heard about the campaign and their association with Red and did not want to turn down an opportunity, you know, as great as this. The money that's raised goes to a great cause, AIDS and HIV prevention in Africa. It's a great gift to give back.
Similar to companies going pink for breast cancer, companies can opt to go red to support the Global Fund, which is a financier of programs involved in the eradication of AIDS in Africa. Other companies to get involved have been Apple, Converse, and American Express in the past. So, Camille, what do you think about the campaign? A worthy cause, obviously, but a worthy reason for a media first?
Look, in terms of the magazine industry, I like the gimmick. It's a lot more creative than the traditional tip-on where you're giving freebies to consumers so you can buy their magazine. What I'm not just that sold on is the brand tie-up. So bringing together AIDS and an alcohol brand, I find that really hard to swallow, for want of a better word.
Yeah. Why do you think? It could be in any brand. Just it's an alcohol brand.
Really? Alcohol and AIDS. Is that symbiotic to you?
Well, yeah, I see your point. I absolutely see your point. Also, as a tree hugger, I did wonder about the actual, you know, churning out loads of extra cardboard to stick on the end of a magazine to make a point. And if you listen to it's a free track from Usher. It's just
he's
a message.
He's just talking, isn't he?
Yeah. So I did have a bit of a problem with that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it seemed like also a wasted opportunity. If you want to have people use this more than once, then give away an Usher track. It can be a B-side. It can be a remix.
Yeah,
it can be a million different things. And I don't think there's enough technology out there. Play button, for example, is quite a unique device that looks like a music badge that, you know, people might wear on their leather jackets or whatever. And they can be, it'll have an MP3 player. You plug your headphones in, away you go. You've got this fashionable little thing. It would use up a lot less cardboard, and you know, it's you would have one track, then you'd have Usher's thing, something more of a keepsake.
Yes,
and
yeah,
hang around, and then you'd have the red logo on there.
Yeah,
I think it was a nice idea that was poorly executed.
Yeah, I think that marketing journalists might get excited about it. Would the consumer get excited about this? I'm not so sure, Alice.
I got excited about it when it came in to the office. But then I listened to it and I stopped listening because it wasn't a track. I was expecting to be a track. And I don't know, the delivery of the message from him, it just was very kind of... I just don't think he was the right artist to do it. If it was Bono, if it was a U2 track or whatever, or it was Bono, you know, preaching about the foundation and things like that, then you would come to expect it. You'd probably listen to it because you know what's coming. It was a weird matchup with Usher. I was just expecting this because I was thinking Belvedere Vodka, they're trying to be kind of luxurious and cool, and they've got this cool hip-hop artist, you know, endorsing them. And it just didn't match for me.
Yeah. Also, keeping in mind it's GQ, I'm pretty sure that Usher's following is predominantly female.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's the right artist for a magazine like GQ.
Sure.
Yeah.
Have you seen how GQ's pretty metro in its... in the way it presents itself, though, pretty metrosexual, if that's still a term. And I think Usher falls in there. But I would also disagree with you with the alcohol and AIDS thing. I mean, I don't really see a problem there. It doesn't really go... the two don't go hand in hand or something like that. And I think an alcohol company has just as much right to do something, you know,
Do something positive.
Well,
I think that's part of their marketing strategy, isn't it? So tick for you then.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's worked on me, but also as an alcohol drinker, maybe not a Belvedere drinker. I don't have that kind of coin. But if KB beer ever came out with something like that, I'd go red for KB beer, maybe.
Yeah, and perhaps I think this is one of the examples that falls in within the category of media agency and a media company trying to be first with something. We've seen so many examples. I mean, every week we get at least three press releases. This is an Australian first. This is a world first. A few weeks ago, we had, hey, this is a Queensland first. Oh, I, you know, I'm not quite convinced that just to be first is the end goal in media.
No, it's not about the media first. It's, you know, obviously the effectiveness, isn't it?
Yes.
And it's a sexy approach to say that something is a first, and yet it might just fall on its ass anyway.
Yeah, right.
It'd be interesting to find out, actually, what the sales figures are for that month from GQ.
Yeah.
They'll reveal it. I think the point that we can also make is that journalists have become quite skeptical, and when as soon as they see the words first, media first, anything that's first or landmark or innovative, the question marks, alarm bells go straight away. So you, if anything, you're bringing more attention, not necessarily for a good reason, to what you're claiming, because you know they'll keep digging and digging to the to get to the point of whether this really is a first, and even if it is it actually significant?
Yeah, I would also point out that I think the sector that's most guilty of this at the moment is online video. I'm a journalist who, by my own admission, isn't particularly tech savvy, right? And I get all these press releases saying, yes, this is first, but a first ad blocking technology. Actually, to be honest, I wouldn't know the difference, and I have to dig and understand the technology to understand whether it is first or not. That there's quite a lot of hoodwinking going on in PR at the moment about being first, and I possibly wouldn't know that. I wouldn't know the better.
Yeah, and I know from our perspective, we're very cautious as to using words such as first, landmark, innovative, because
iconic. Another one,
iconic.
Don't
my favorite.
Yeah. I hate that word. Is obviously
the most overword used in Australia at the moment.
In my head, as an ex-journalist myself, so I suppose that does help in that. Yeah. You know, we question the use of words and dig deeper ourselves before we put any media messaging out.
Aren't you itching to put them in there? If obviously, if it's justified, or perhaps even loosely justified.
If it's justified, then you know you work to your strengths.
And you've got to have a lot of faith in that first. If we use this MP3 magazine thing as an example, because everyone's going to compare the next one that comes out with that first. Oh, they may have been the first, but Smirnoff have come out and they've done it properly. You know, it's a big, you have to have a lot of faith that it's going to be the first and it's going to be done really well. Otherwise, I'd be hiding the fact that it is the first and just come and say, hey, we've done this, and see how we go.
Good point.
Next, The Renovators finishes up. Charlie's Angels goes to go.
You're listening to the Mumbrella Cast. For more on all of these stories, visit mumbrella.com.au. Well, it finally happened. The Renovators finished up this week, and it did quite well on Wednesday night. It was actually the most watched show for the night. It got a Metro audience of 1.264 million. That was the second half of the two-hour episode, basically. It was when the winner was announced. It was pretty impressive considering their debut episode took 856,000, and I guess we're no strangers to the fact that they have struggled in the ratings since it came on air on 10. So I think, you know, I think they'd be pretty happy with coming out on top on Wednesday night. David Mott has said that they have promised to renovate The Renovators when it goes into its second season in 2012, so we will stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, over on Nine, the new look Charlie's Angels has actually been shifted to one of Nine's digital channels, Go. It was on the same time slot at 8:30, but it was didn't go too well in its first couple of outings, so they've shifted it across. It was actually replaced by two repeats of The Big Bang Theory, which has amazingly done really well on Nine. I don't know anyone else that watches Big Bang, but that's just...
I used to love it.
Really?
I've not stopped watching it, even though it is the most loved TV show.
Yeah, well, apparently so. And that was kind of the research from Roy Morgan last month that said, we talked about before, that Big Bang Theory was Australia's most loved show, but it had, you know, Nine have continued to roll out repeats of it recently, and they brought brought back the new series the other day this week, which was that scored 1.5 million. So it is clearly popular. I am a minority here.
Why? What do you think it is? What's the secret to it being Australia's most loved show?
I don't know why it's Australia's most loved show. I mean, I think I just enjoy it in that these bumbling geeks who are just kind of who live next door to this hot blonde chick, and they just kind of bumble through life, and their little escapades are just quite amusing. And it's the whole idea of geek is cool, and it follows that trend. So.
Sure, sure.
And they're good actors, and it's a funny script, basically.
Can I ask, is it placed in a spot that pretty much anything can do well? Is it at that 7:30 time slot on a weekday where loads of people are just sitting down watching telly anyway?
The idea of placing it in a prime spot is that you put your key programs so that you compete with other programs to battle it out in prime time. So they need to have some kind of confidence in that program. Mm. And if it's not doing well, it'll be shifted. So it has to perform well, and then it'll stay there. It isn't that it's just sitting there, hence it will perform well. Mm. So it's the other way around.
Right. Yeah. So what you're saying is Charlie's Angels has not performed well, hence the shift to go.
Absolutely.
Cole, what do you think about the shift to go? Do you think it will kind of get? I mean, obviously, it's not going to get the figures of the main station, but I mean, the digital channels are going all right for 7 and 9.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed. Having just returned from overseas, from 2 years away, the digital channels have really sort of been gaining pace, or at least getting more widespread. And I really feel like the digital channels are a great way to experiment for the commercial channels. And I feel like they should be trying out new things, and especially, and I guess I'm biased, but I think they should be producing more local content, which if you're familiar with the whole convergence report, you know, it's not really happening. And they should be, producing more local content, and they should be just trying different stuff. Like, you know, throw it at the wall and see what sticks. Instead, what I feel like they're doing is using these digital channels to sweep shows under the carpet, like Charlie's Angels.
Sure.
Okay, we've bought it. It's not going well. We have only given it 2 weeks to give it a chance.
Mm.
Let's throw it over to Go or Gem or 11. I was pretty surprised when 11 launched that they put Neighbours and The Simpsons on there. And I thought that was a really good step, definitely to draw audiences across.
Mm.
I'm just kind of disappointed that they're not doing more with local talent and really experimenting and then bumping it into the normal channel. But ABC 2 is doing that, and that's ABC. They can get away with that kind of stuff.
Sure. Camille, do you think, you know, the Renovators, obviously it came back up a little bit in the finale, but how do you see it kind of positioned against all the other the shows this year? What do you see as, at the end of 2011, what will be the biggest rating show?
Well, usually I'm thinking MasterChef, isn't it? So, or is it The Block?
The
in
Block.
Terms of regular programming, anyway, yeah. Not sports, obviously.
Sure, sure.
But big disappointment, probably Renovators, in terms of the expectation around it. So I understand it's coming back, but to a smaller version of it.
Yeah, and yeah, they've said that they will renovate it. So I'm not quite sure into what detail they will make the chop. But you'd have to be looking at how often they air it and what they've got to support it next year.
Yeah, there's clearly an appetite for renovation shows in Australia. Where did The Block succeed? Where the Renovators failed, do you think?
I think on the back, I mean, this is just my personal opinion, but I think on the back of MasterChef, it came on straight after MasterChef.
Yeah.
They're very similar kind of format shows in the way, I know, I just get the same feel about them. They're obviously created by the same production company, which might have something to do with it as well. But to me, when I first started watching, it was the home reno version of MasterChef. And I get kind of MasterChef fatigue. We've spoke about this before. At the end, you just kind of want it to be over. Whereas I think The Block, it's different. It's different in the way it is different to the MasterChef renovators kind of formats, but it was also a proven format before, and it's successful before. So you've got that return audience thing. You don't have the audience suffering from that same MasterChef fatigue on 10.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to see with the upfront TV buying season coming up, the renovators and shows like it attracting the same amount of dollars that they did last year. The upfronts, I think, is when 70% of airtime is sold. Upfront media agencies pile in and spend all their dollars. But yeah, so far it's looking like 7 is probably a winner, obviously, for this year, and 9 and 10 trailing. Any thoughts on?
Yeah, I don't think there's any surprises there. I think it's that time of the year, that fourth quarter, where we're talking about the TV rate negotiations again. And the latest reports in the newspapers is that probably not going to be any rate changes for Channel 10,
right. Possibly
5% increase for 7, and maybe 3 to 5 for 9. But again, I find these stories quite interesting, and these TV rate negotiations, because every year of late, you know, we have these big articles in the newspapers by the media marketing journals who are obsessed by it. Mm. And yet they say themselves in the stories, actually sales heads do point out that this focus is almost irrelevant these days, given the amount of offline assets and publishing partnerships and the digital channels. So really, what's the big focus on that when it's a bit of an old discussion?
Yeah, and with the squeeze in the economy, obviously, I just wonder whether the market is shifting more to become more of a buyer's market, more power for media agencies.
Next, Aussie marketers don't need social media expertise. Thinking of working at an ad agency? Looking for the best creatives to develop your next ad campaign? Look no further than the Mumbrella Creative Agency Review. 148 pages of hardcore industry intelligence to help you make your next big agency decision. Visit book.focalattractions.com.au/MCAR.
Earlier this week, we wrote a story about an IBM study of CMOs in Australia and globally. That found that while leadership qualities were a necessity for marketers, social media expertise was very much less of a priority in the next 3 to 5 years. So Camille, what do you think of these findings? Obviously, leadership qualities would be important for marketers.
Yeah.
But are you surprised at all that social media is so far down the list? I mean, only 12% of respondents. There are only 57 respondents, by the way, I should point out. But so quite a small sample size, but still pretty low down the priorities.
12%. Look, to my mind, you can't be expected to be a master of everything. I mean, isn't that why you hire experts, consultants, digital agencies? And the idea is you surround yourself with smart people, smart thinkers who specialize in different areas, for example, within the overall marketing mix. And then it's your job to bring it all together and make something out of that. So for me, the things that rated higher, such as leadership skills, voice of customer insights and creative thinking, should be higher. I'm more concerned about the 21% who understand products and services. I think that should be a bit higher. And the finance skills, which is about, was it 26%?
Yes.
I think that's a bit reflective of the amount of CMOs who become CEOs, i.e. very low. You hear a lot of sales heads becoming CEOs, but not chief marketing officers.
I guess the reason that people are surprised by these results is that how many big brand failures we've seen recently in social media. Just on Mumbrella, we've seen Louis the Fly, Panasonic. That show that marketers don't really understand social media to their cost. Alice, what do you think?
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, Camille, I agree with you that you can't be an expert in everything, and so this is why you employ people who are into certain fields. But ultimately, you know, the marketers are the ones that are approving the work of the people that they're hiring, and they're the ones kind of approving the release that goes out to the media about whatever campaign. And of late, I've kind of noticed that from in-house teams and also from agencies who specialise in the area as well, just throwing out a new social media campaign with really doesn't seem to be that much thought.
For the sake of it.
We're doing a social media campaign. And there's been some big brands that I've thought you could really have done better with that. And as you mentioned with the Panasonic, and obviously there was a lot of thought that went into the Panasonic, so it's not as if they just threw out, hey, we want you to like us on Facebook. But I think in this kind of area where people think that they can go out and do social media, I think to think that you don't have to have expertise in that area in 5 years' time, let alone now, I think is a bit close-minded. And where are you going to grow from there if that's not a priority?
Yeah, I think the problem in the advertising agency space is that advertising agencies have a campaign mentality. I think campaign is a very important word because it means that it implies short-termism. So it's sort of hit and hope. You'll launch a campaign which you think has a beginning and an end. Of course, it doesn't. These things go on indefinitely and they keep running. And a lot of agencies, and perhaps on the marketing side as well, they don't have community managers to ensure that the brand thrives and survives in the social media space. That's what I think possibly is the problem.
Yeah, I think to your point as well, Alice, if there's, you know, yes, there have been some shocking campaigns of late, but is that also a reflection of the current agency landscape, which to me is almost more of a concern, because if they're the ones who are supposed to be the experts and leading the hand of marketers and telling them, look, this is what you're hiring us for, to give you these insights and these expertise, then I'd be firing my agency,
Another point is that was raised in the survey, finance skills. They were also listed very low down the order of priorities for marketers. In a recession, well, not a recession, but in economic tight times, I'd have thought that's quite important. Camille?
Yeah, I think maybe, as I was saying earlier on, finance skills, it seems to be the way with marketers versus salespeople. And you would think, though, that they should be obsessed about ROI. So measurement metrics should be top of mind for them, which is different to finance skills per se. But I think that there should be a measurement here about analytics and metrics, because that for me is more important for a marketer.
Sounds like you work for IBM. that was very much the purpose of launching this survey, was to say marketers aren't great at understanding analytics. You need IBM software.
All right. Well, I mean, also because, marketers are very right brain. It's very creative. So having said that, these findings aren't a big surprise. And, maybe they do need to tap more into their left brain. And again, that metrics analytics side.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Next, NAB pranks again.
There's more to radio than music through your headphones. Radio can connect your brand with consumers in more ways than just over the airwaves. Check out the case study for Nissan Microcitizen, where listeners were sent to LA, Barcelona and New York to get in sync with the city. Or the interview on how the Lady Gaga deal for Vodafone all-time prepaid was done. See that and more at seeradiodifferently.com.
Clemenger BBDO have again created prank ads for NAB. The ad records the reactions of victims who are locked in a room. One takes place in a job interview and the other in a home inspection situation. Let's take a listen.
I've got a feeling from what I've seen already, you are someone who will be committed, which is exactly what we're after. You need to relax. It's all good. It's all fine. You're going to love us.
Really,
I can see you. Where are you going? Have a seat, mate. It's all good. So welcome aboard. It's great to have you here.
Can I get out?
There's no need to get out.
Hello? Hello?
This is your life.
I'm looking for a job interview, okay?
You certainly are. Would you like a biffy?
No, I don't.
You sure?
I don't.
They're yummy?
No.
Okay, I'll have one. Relax, make yourself at home, feel like you're going to be here for the long haul. You are going nowhere.
So unlike their honesty ads that use the general public returning lost wallets with cash still in it and the sort, these actually use actors. Robin, do you think it holds much weight knowing that they're actually actors?
To be honest, I don't think it makes a difference. I thought they're quite funny when I watched them. I laughed out loud, and it doesn't bother me that they're actors. I mean, there's a good point made in the comment stream. People have been watching wrestling for decades.
Yeah.
They know that it's fake. They're still entertained by it. And sure. And I thought they worked quite well.
Yeah, yeah. Colin, you a fan?
I'm a fan of the honesty ads. I enjoyed the coffee one. But, yeah, this one, I don't know, it comes back to the Panasonic Romy Guller, whatever his name is,
Gala
thing, where you're using an actor to pull a prank. It just seems a bit, it just seems a bit soft to me. And I think while we might be aware and while the agency has admitted, yes, they're actors, when that goes out, the general public don't know they're actors.
And do they care, though?
Is it, well, do they care, or will they sort of think, oh, NAB, playing it pretty dark here? Like,
yeah.
True, being hoodwinked by a bank, you know, that's never happened before.
Exactly. So. Or just the whole, like, the guy's got a stapler gun.
Yeah, right.
A nail gun, yeah. You know? Like, is that. People who aren't media savvy are just going to be like, whoa, NAB.
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly.
Don't stuff around.
Yeah.
With the actors, though, they were kind of put in a situation that they thought. The reactions were said to be genuine, though, weren't they? When they went into the job interview,
Yeah, that's true. Sorry, yeah. That's a good point that should be made. That they were actors, but they were actors that were told they were only testing the strengths and weaknesses of the manager as a job interviewer. They weren't told that it's part of a commercial, which also, I guess, it makes a difference.
Sure. Camille, what do you...
Yeah, I agree with Colin in that perhaps it was a bit bad timing following the Panasonic palaver, really. Having said that, I still think the video is a lot more entertaining than Panasonic's. Yeah. And, I mean, just generally speaking, obviously NAB and its agency, Clem's Melbourne, has been streets ahead in terms of their campaigns and the marketing, obviously with a highly awarded breakup campaign and honesty experiments. Although now, with everything that's gone on with Panasonic and these latest ads, it's made me question. Actually, my instinctive response was, does that mean the honesty experiments were set up as well?
Yeah, I thought the same, actually.
I'm sure they're not, but then it made me question it too.
Yeah.
So it's,
Yeah.
Which is not positive for me.
No.
Yeah, and there's been so much pranking going on. Perhaps, the public will be desensitised to pranking, perhaps not enjoy it some more if people keep doing it.
Or perhaps that opens the door for a new show on Go, perhaps even.
Perhaps, or maybe Eleven, which they've been... pranking their neighbours' stars recently. Have you watched those ads? Yeah, as a neighbours promo, they've, I guess, invited one of the neighbours' stars down and he'll be in a plaza drinking a coffee and then there's a busker there and the busker suddenly changes songs and starts playing the neighbours' theme song and then all of a sudden, two people start dancing and then three people start dancing. They'll put on these, like, purple afros and the guy... There's also another one with the girl. And they're just kind of sitting there going, to use, acronyms, WTF. And then a Mexican band comes out. And it's all very cute because it's also kind of laughing at the TV star, which I think is, But that's a prank, but it's a prank on an actor. And you kind of wonder, is he in on it as well?
But
the acting was very good, so maybe being neighbours, maybe it wasn't.
In terms of a TV show, I think if you recall, You're on Candid Camera, and more recently
Punked
with Ashton Kutcher. So
yeah.
I think for me, it's more is pranking the new flash mob.
Or flash mob pranking, Colin just
bring
explained.
Together, yeah.
Why not?
Well, that's all we have time for today. A big thank you to Camille Alacon.
Thanks, guys.
Colin Delaney.
Thank you.
And Alice Telikovsky, who is this week leaving Mumbrella to go travelling.
Thank you, everyone, and bye for now.
The Mumbrella Cast was recorded at the studios of CBS Interactive. Ciao for now.